Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. It's Saturday, December 12th, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's December 12th. I'm just kidding. And we'd like to welcome everybody to the show this morning. And right off, you know, I'm here with my sidekick, my ace buku, my guy, Jonathan Mason. And then we have special guest host broadcasting from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis, Mr. Anthony Scott, who seems to be moving and talking right now. Hey, what's happening, man? What's happening, you guys?
Hey, you know, I'm doing wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grateful and thankful to be alive. A lot of crazy things are happening. We're hearing a lot of good news, just politically on the advancement of our democracy, I would say. And we talked about, before I get into it, how are you doing, Anthony?
Yeah. Hey, Anthony, can you hear us, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, Jonathan said, how are you doing?
I can hear you clearly.
Okay, how are you doing then, buddy? Okay, we got a little bit of a delay, but that's okay. We're going to keep going.
Okay.
Before we get all into that, I just want to, you know, we need to set this up.
I'm doing good in this crazy world that we've got to try to sort these things out.
Yeah, we agree, and we're going to sort them out today. I know Jonathan has a whole bunch of stuff. I got a whole bunch of stuff. Anthony has a whole bunch of stuff. But let's frame this real quick or quickly here. And I'm going to let you guys have your time because I'm going to go back and start sharing the video across different platforms. It's going to take me like a minute and a half, so you guys will have plenty of time. But the reason why the title of this show is the Black History, and I feel I have to explain this because I got like several text messages last night, and people were hot with me, everybody except Mr. Tucker. And Mr. Tucker said, I can't say what he said about them people, but he said it's like this. For the last 60 years, Black Americans, especially Black Minnesotans, and the ones here, I have Mr. Edwards' book right here I just got. I was supposed to get it from his house when he passed away, but it just never got to me, so I actually found a copy. It's called The Minneapolis Story, Through My Eyes. This is the detailed history of 1950 to 1980s in Black Minnesotans. Mr. Edwards was and still is the top historian. The reason why I'm bringing this book to the game, to the show today, is because we're repeating a lot of stuff that has happened years and years and years and years ago to Black people. The situation in 1965 for Black Minnesotans is really no different than 2020, pre-COVID-19. And just one more point. You know, people say that this is toxic. But after reading this book again and figuring out everything that's happening to us and we're not doing anything, we have some people like us that sold us out.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put it plain and simple.
And that happens all the time, Don.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't be surprised by it, I would say, because the selloutry within the African-American community is huge because they're trying to seek, and like Mr. Tucker always says, they're trying to be accepted, not respected. And when you're not able to put away your pride and your ego and pull everything together and say, this is the attack. We know the history on what's been done to us here, right?
Yes.
Why are we our worst enemy when it comes to building an infrastructure for Black Minnesotans and not being able to come to the table without our tail between our legs, say, you know what, I want to bring in this man, this guy over here, this individual over here, this woman here, so we can actually bring a big plan together. I was thinking about this the other day ago before Anthony gets in here, but we had so many individuals like yourself who know the history behind Minnesota and definitely within your own generation of you know, black, you know, I guess you would say black with no sugar. You're the generation with, that are black with no sugar in them. Many of them have been, you know, given good job positions. They might have, you know, took some money as far as, you know, to be silent on the behalf of white, you know, basically white America or the status quo. And why haven't they now broken up and, you know, help this younger generation come together and talk about the history and how we can change the narrative within Minnesota? But I would love to be able to read that book as well. So can we get that put on the screen by our producer?
Yeah, we can. We'll get it. I just have it like this. I didn't take a picture. I should have, Jonathan. You caught me off guard. I didn't take a picture of it and post it, but I will get something put on social media so people can see this, because this book is so interesting. Now, Anthony, can you are you able to communicate with us right now? Okay, I'll wait till he chimes in and I'll stop, but I just want to go with this. This is going to blow you away. Just one thing before we get into this this other piece. So the city of Minneapolis in general, is always talking about housing. They have a housing crisis. I drove over there to drop something off one of my wife's colleagues for the holidays, you know, just kind of leave it on the porch and dip. And so I got a chance to drive back through past Chicago and 38th and then come down Lake Street, go to the Cedar where the third precinct was, or Minnehaha. And I'm looking over there and I see all these little encampments. And then I go by a couple of parks in Minneapolis, encampments. Now, the immediate response from the city of Minneapolis is that we need more money, right? We need more money. We have to handle this homeless problem. Okay, back in June of 2002, the Neighborhood Revitalization Program, called NRP, and the planning department from the city of Minneapolis.
Well, let's see that.
Huh?
Can you?
Back then, I'll get the name here. He has them written in here. Jackie Cherry Holmes was involved. Miss Natalie Johnson Lee. A lot of these politicians who aren't really politicians anymore, but doing something in the community.
Yeah.
But Jonathan, they got $1 billion.
No way.
They spent just under $1 billion on housing, which means that's the equivalent of $19,230,000 per unit. That money, it's in words. I mean, you can't. It's in words. It's right here. It has this truth that there's a problem. There's a significant management, organizational design problem within the city of Minneapolis that we already knew about. But how can you spend in 2002 $1 billion, which is equivalent to $19 million per housing unit? There's not that – we don't have those kind of people in North Minneapolis in the area where this housing program was, that – you know where all those new houses are off Olsen Highway once you get off 94 and you head west? It's the Holman area, that whole new neighborhood over there in North Minneapolis. That's what this book is talking about, how that was developed, how, you know, the different things connected. And I see us getting ready to run into the same kind of situation with our growing homeless population in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And us getting ready to, again, repeat the same stuff we did in 2002. Not us personally, but the systems out there, the politicians. So,
right. And that's sad when you don't see the reflection of all that money given in our communities. A lot of people's pockets got fat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of generational wealth was passed down, not within our own community, I would say. But, you know, we have so much things going on. We have this vaccine. This vaccine, what is going on with the vaccine, and what are people saying? Because we're hearing things like the black community has to go first for the shot. Those in healthcare positions and places get the shot first. And many of us have said, personally, and this is just me, my opinion personally, I'm not getting a damn shot, okay? I'm just not, don't feel the need to, but I really want to know where everybody feels about getting the shot, and do you think that the black community should go first? Well, my can you hear me, fellas? Can you hear
perfect,
me?
Perfect, perfect. You came in. Roger that. Go.
Great, great. Yeah, my feeling on that is, look, there have been people that have gotten the virus. Hey, 45 has gotten the virus. And Giuliani, they didn't got the virus. But all of a sudden, I don't see the president quarantining. I didn't see him have to go into a lockdown because so he, they must have access to something that other people don't have.
Of course.
Whether they do or not. What it causes is an uncertainty, and let's face it, their track record is horrible. Their track record with the Tuskegee, with the syphilis, with the, they have actually experimented on black people with these things. So
black men, black
women, see.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look, I'm gonna be honest with you. They line black men up, and for me, it's the MRC-5. You know, a lot of people don't know about this. If you're tuned in, if you Google MRC-5, it's aborted 14-week-old Caucasian fetus, a deprived lung, and it's lung tissue, and that's one of the main ingredients within AstraZeneca. And you know, and once that was exposed, you know, the success rate went down to 70% right after, you know, people start talking about it. But I'm wondering how many aborted Caucasian fetuses do you have to be able to provide the world? They already have, like, it's going to be 500 million vaccines. How in the world do you have 500 million aborted Caucasian fetus babies? And we have to ask these questions. And for me, it's not being conspiratory. These are their ingredients. I'm reading it, you know, and I read. And that's another reason why I think it would behoove the black community to start reading more and look into the things that we need to look into. Because guess what? Once you read what I'm reading, you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's a big money trail. And we're going to be able to do it. But once again, if you can throw the number up, we did. Please call in because we would like to know. It's 347-426-3904. And just call in and let us know how you feel about the vaccine because I personally, I'm not going to take it. And what are the repercussions? You know, we've seen the lady out in, I think it was West Fargo County. Was it West Fargo where she refused to shut down? And then Keith Ellis had sent the police over there. And now they got court on Wednesday. Do the rebels, do the patriots go out to the court date? Now are we going to start seeing this happen? This is going to happen Wednesday. But they're refusing. Restaurant owners are refusing. She opened up shop. She said, what do I got to lose? She opened shop. The restaurant filled up. People were eating, drinking, having a good time. Keith Ellison sent them in there. What do you think is going to happen? And then are there going to be repercussions with the vaccine?
Yes, please. Give us a call, 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. Hey, can I tell you something, Jonathan? I'm glad you said it because they're setting us up already. Let me show you something here. You know, our buddy here has been meeting with Biden, Al Sharpton. I just put a picture of Al Sharpton up. I don't know if you guys.
I know, man. Oh.
And you know what? Now, if Al Sharpton rolls up and pulls his sleeve back and takes the shot, although he might just get some saline water solution, we don't know.
No, they're going to give him the real thing. They're experimenting on Al Sharpton on live TV, and he's gonna be the test baby for all of Black America. And you know, what do you think?
Well, I heard Obama and Clinton, and they were gonna take it on TV. It's gonna be a televised type of a thing. Like,
if you guys can't see the setup, they're used to doing rap shows and concerts for the nominees. They didn't do that this year, COVID. Now they're going on TV live, getting the shot. This is absolutely ridiculous. I have never seen this. If people are tuned in and not understanding the realities of what we're doing, their presidents are lining up to get the vaccine on TV. That doesn't.
Yeah, something's wrong with that. Something's wrong with it. It's not like the flu or polio. Hey, we have a caller. Caller, let me just get you going. Caller, you're live on Our Black News. What's your name and what's your question?
This is Ben from Richfield, Minneapolis, St. Paul area.
Okay. You speak up just a little, please.
Okay. Yeah, I know we've been let me turn off my TV for a second. Give me a second here. Yeah, let me just say this. Number one, I'm not taking a shot.
Okay.
Because I feel why not?
Yeah.
Because I think I feel like the media is pushing fear. I feel like they're using this for population control.
Okay.
And I just feel like that. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say that the COVID-19 has aired out the black population in the U.S. pretty nicely. We are dying and catching COVID at incredible rates, and
they're telling us,
and that's one of the things that we have to have access to figure this out, because I mean there's a couple black scientists involved in the COVID development, the vaccine, but we also know that Google.
Do you know there's a fact that this is like Tuskegee all over again. When they put a black woman, I feel like this is like the Tuskegee experiment again. They're just using us as the lab monkeys to do it. That's how they see us.
Mm-hmm.
Why
are we still wearing these masks in these stores?
You know, that's a question that I can't answer. And, from what my father-in-law is a medical doctor, and he believes in the mask to protect not only yourself, but to protect others. And if doctors do that in the operating room, when they're operating on people, so the germs from them don't get in the person's wounds, or, I could see some validity in that, and that's just me personal. I'm not making it political at all. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Here's my concern. If they say that this is like a pandemic, how people throw their masks in a bio bin? Why are they not out there in places where people can throw that away when they're done at a store? Because
that's
a pandemic.
Really...
Wow. Yeah.
That's a big question, because if COVID-19 is that, what it is, we're still, scientists don't know. But, now, like you said, 45 has said that it's his. Now, he wrote the executive order that demanding that Pfizer gives the vaccine, so now it's Republican-led. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Republicans are now forcing the vaccine, and they don't see it coming because Donald Trump is doing it because he wants to get it in at the last part of his presidency and say that he's the one who implemented the vaccine, but they don't know that he's totally played into the hands of the devil. I hate to tell you. It's unbelievable.
You hey, Colin, thanks for your question. But go ahead, Doug.
It's unbelievable to me. And the Republicans don't see it. They don't see it. That now he's forcing the vaccine that they're going with it. And now you're going to see the shift. A lot of people are going to go get it. I really believe I'm going to be probably one of the top, in the 10% that fights it all the way. I'm going to fight it. I don't care if I have to do religious rites. I'm already writing up the forms now. But what do we do to get out of it? Or how do we get out of getting the vaccine?
But Jonathan, isn't there variables on this vaccine? I mean, don't they have like a top vaccine that you're probably going to need money for, or you're going to have the Walmart vaccine that you can get for a knockoff price.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where they're going with this thing.
Yeah, and also, when they gave us the numbers on Moderna and also, and these numbers are, it sounds good. 90% sounds good, right?
Mm, yeah.
90 sounds good, but then you say, if 90% of what? Because, I do
yes.
And that's what I have to say. I'll ask for 5% on $1 million all day. I love that. But a lot of people don't know. 10%, though, of $330 million is $33 million. So 33 million people are now potentially going to get affected negatively from this vaccine when it has the COVID-19 now, after the numbers, after this long time, have a success rate of almost 99.9%. So, you know, a lot of people are dying, but remember, when I looked at the abortion numbers, and they're over at 700,000. You got heart attacks. You got cancer. They ain't had no vaccine for cancer. They still ain't got nothing for AIDS. And Tony Fauci, which a lot of people don't understand, you know where he came up in, it was the AIDS era. He was practicing on black folks all day long.
Yeah, and he was. And it's really funny, Jonathan, since you put it like that, where is the cure for cancer and AIDS? Is that not just as serious as COVID-19? They all kill people.
Thank you.
So where are the cures? Now, I'm going to tell you what happened with from the Muscular Dystrophy Act. The Cancer Society is what I'm thinking of, and the MS Society. For years growing up in the 60s, a great event for our family was to sit in front of the TV Sunday night for Jerry Lewis's telethon, his MS telethon. It went on, forever. It had all the top stars, yellow, red, black, and white. It was a family event, cross cultures. Okay? They raised so much money for years and years and years. Then the Cancer Society of the American Cancer Society. And I am not demonizing them. I'm not trying to defame them or whatever, but it's a question that we as a society should be able to ask. With all the money spent and donated, the best thing you could do is turn out CEOs and board of directors that make over $100,000 or $500,000 a year in those agencies? Because it's not us. Google the Cancer American Cancer Society. Look at the board. Look at the staff. Look at their salaries. Come on.
And you touched on a very crazy point. And see, this is the part that I love. It's the history part of it. And I'm glad that you put history in the title, because when you're talking about the American Cancer Association, we know that was started by Rockefeller. And so Rockefeller was the one who started creating cancer in America because of the petroleum, right? The petroleum products and stuff like that. When they realized that he was creating cancer, they were putting it in from the vaccine. So they were doing that with the vaccine. Then he created the American Cancer Association. So all of the same people, it's like me, I'm giving the cancer, and then I'm playing like I'm trying to cure it. Still ain't got no cure for it. And this history part is vital, because once you realize, it's the same person who's giving us cancer that's trying to save it, and all of our monies are going to it. That's like when you look at the books at the Red Cross. The Red Cross gets it. Every dollar that they get, 90% of it, 90 cents of every dollar goes to the board members. The 10% go to the people with the burning houses in them.
Yeah.
And we have to change that mindset.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. There's a lot of stuff going on, but, you know, and I told you guys this before, but I watched a debate between William F. Buckley and James Baldwin that they had at London. I think it was Oxford in England, and that university. And I watched the full thing in 57 minutes entirety. And if you really look at that, I mean, it's not an action film. It's not a horror film. It's not a love drama or documentary. But what it is, it's a solid piece of rhetoric that shows, it exposes black America to the point of that we have not, all these things have been said, but nothing's been done.
Right.
Because there's a meeting. Every time something blows up a community, there's a press conference and a meeting. Press conference and a meeting. Then another meeting.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and so for 60 years, that's been the format.
Right.
Now with COVID-19, that has really exposed it again, you know, blacks having one of the highest COVID-19 rates, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What's that?
That they're reporting. I don't believe them.
Yeah. Well, I have a tendency to look at some numbers from some places where I might be likely to believe that, but everyone has right to their opinion. But what I'm saying is that how do we make a new normal that goes away from what's been happening?
Right.
You know, I heard that a lady in North Minneapolis just got $5 million for her nonprofit.
Talked about defunding the police yesterday because they did it in Minneapolis.
Yeah, but that's going to come back. See, Minneapolis again. Let me tell you what's wrong with that. Let me tell you what's wrong with that whole situation. And I'm going to shut up for a minute. Let me tell you what's wrong with that whole situation. We are all humans, right? We're human beings. And when some fall, others rise. Okay? That's just history and the nature of being human in a society. So you're going to defund the police, idiots. Go ahead. Because what's going to rise is going to be uglier than a white cop killing a black man in the street. And that's
just a
go ahead.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's a shell game. They talk about defunding the police. Okay, let's follow the dollar. What about all these payouts? Where is all this money coming from, all these payouts? Now, they've come up with some plan that I saw. Part of it is they're going to have a, what do you want to call it, maybe a war chest, where there's money set aside for them to contribute to all their discretion. You know, what they need to do, this defunding thing, is a bunch of foolishness. They need to change the mindset of the police. They need to do the training. They need to get more women to be police. We need to have police that reflect our community. And this just goes round and round in a circle, like you and Jonathan were saying earlier. You know, I was in a meeting, Child Protection, 15 years ago, and they're going around all of this stuff that we've got to do, and we did three days. One of the supervisors who was getting ready to retire took me back to his office and said, look, here's what we developed 40 years ago, and it was way better than the things they're talking about now. So in other words, they're not even looking at what they did in the past. They're not even looking at that.
A lot of that stuff got thrown out just due to the mentality. So you do have to revise and revisit history and look at, okay,
yes,
this is what we're dealing with, and what are the old solutions, because we knew a lot of those were based around, you know, race and stuff like that. I would say that the biggest problem for what happened with Minneapolis, the city council decision, is they fell into the category of sloganeering. And we were talking about sloganeering before on, you know, you hear these slogans, but what is defunding the police when you're gonna just give them overtime and you're going to do other things and you're going to revisit this and add more police? They didn't stop the police average or wherever we're at now. You're just giving them less resources. So less money for the same cops, that means they're going to a lot more angrier. Crime is going to rise. We're going to see a lot of bad things to come out. And guess what? One of the officers this week, Tu Tao, his lawyer just filed another injunction and wanted to push the date back until July 5th. But I hope that the judge isn't going to grant that it follows through March 8th so they all can be tried. Now, and you know, we have to talk on this real quick because what does it look like during COVID? See, remember, we talked about COVID-19, coronavirus, being very similar to the last epidemic we had in 1918 called the Spanish flu that lasted for 2 years. It was in a series of three waves, right? And we're in the second deadly wave, because the second wave is the most deadliest. That's why everybody's like, wow, 2,000, 3,000 people dying a day, 2,000, 3,000 people dying a day. Well, this is the second wave. We have another wave that comes after this, right? And everybody gets anxious, everybody gets upset, they're tired of wearing the mask, it's over the holiday season, we get together, Christmas time, holiday, people defy it, no money, people are upset, together. And the third wave happened simultaneously with the George Floyd court date, March 8th. And we're already under another 6 week. Joe Biden hasn't announced that yet, but he said that we're going to do
100 days of a straight mask, the whole United States of America. When that happens, it's going to be fights all over the United States in Republican states, red states, we know that. And this is going to build this animosity against, you know, the black community and other people who are.
But why are we fighting? Who's fighting? Why are we fighting? We have a caller holding.
Everybody's fighting for different reasons. Black folks are fighting because they're just tired of getting killed and gunned down and not got the money. White folks are feeling like they're not right now. The Republican white folks feel like their freedoms and their liberties are being hindered, and they're being attacked as an American. They don't even see the black folks.
Yeah, but isn't that strange that they're feeling that way and we're feeling like our feeling, like the way we're feeling and the way they're feeling? Because, you know, when the Constitution was written, we were property, and they were talking about them. So the evolution
That's
is showing.
That's irony in it all. Yeah. Right, that's irony in all.
Yep. Here we go. We have a caller. Let's see if we can hear this caller. Caller, you're going to have to speak up. You're live on the air. What's your name and question? Caller, you're on the air? Okay. That's a friend of mine. Right there, I see. Anthony, you got me again. But anyway, go ahead.
But we're at this spot. And I see the temperature in America rising, right? Joe Biden and them aren't going to have any real plans because you know why? They all their picks yesterday. Did you see? It's Obama 2.0. They got Susan Rice. They got the girl from the best. It's Obama 2.0, right? Without the black man at the top. Now this is exactly what they love, you know. And now we're going to go to war. China's our friend now again, out of all no reason. Everything's going to go back to being manufactured in China. We're going to lose this money.
Yeah.
And it's not, when I say us, I mean the black community. Because this is what's really attacking the black community. I can tell you the numbers that they don't tell you. I don't believe the numbers that we're dying at the highest rates because we barely even have our people in the long care facilities because they live with grandma and them until they die anyway.
Yeah.
But what really is the numbers is that black businesses, small businesses, 50 to 60% of all small black businesses have closed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're done.
COVID-19. That's the real number you should be paying attention to.
That is true, yeah.
The black community is struggling. Oh, are we struggling? We're struggling.
I don't know if you guys read, but I guess the state of Minnesota and the Republicans in the Denver DFL in the House and in the Senate are getting ready or have tossed around some stimulus for business. And, you know, what that traditionally means is that some nonprofits are going to get some money and a few businesses are going to get some money because businesses don't like to be holding to the state, you know, because there's too many strings attached. And I'll give you a fine example.
Is there stipulations under this grant money or are
I'm waiting to read it. I just didn't want to read anything else this week. So I'm going to probably read it over the weekend. But there's some pieces there that just from the surface look like it's, you know, it could help because a restaurant, it's not going to help a restaurant. It might help a retail place like that sells clothes, but I don't think a restaurant is going to benefit from this thing that the state is trying to cut.
Oh, unfortunate. That's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. If people could donate real quick, I wanted to jump on here. If you could donate to the Uptown Small Business Fund, that's our GoFundMe, the Uptown Small Business Fund. A lot of the Uptown businesses are crumbling at the seams, and we know if Uptown goes, we're slow for the South Side. You know, right now, North Side don't got no businesses anyway. So,
they do. What do you mean they do?
Well, I
get my hair did and buy some weed. Okay, they do have businesses.
They're pouring a lot of money into the North Side.
Yeah, but this is what it is. It's going into big empty pockets of the vultures who aren't even from this community. I got people, you know, these nonprofits. People are from Jamaica and they're from Kingston's and they're from all these other places. They come in. They really don't like our culture anyway. And then the black. You know, black American Negro natives, because that's what we are, Negro natives, who have maintained and somehow survived through the white supremacy, were here. And I really, at the end of the day, is the North Side is going to keep getting money, and nothing's going to change unless we actually bring real money into the pockets of the citizens. You are not with the nonprofits who are not, they're not even paying their employees. Well, I was telling one of the groups with the shirts on, I said, come on, man. Y'all making five, and I'm not going to tell you what color they are because there's multiple colors of shirts. We got pink shirts, green shirts, yellow shirts, orange shirts.
Red shirts.
Respect all the shirts, but there was a particular group of shirts I was telling them. You guys ain't getting nothing more than $10, $15 an hour, and you're right above poverty level, and you could be doing more. And the owner of the shirts, he was highly upset with me. Oh, don't listen to Mason. I'm trying to give him business acumen and all that.
Yeah, of course.
So the money's not going to the people.
No.
And so we do not bring a strategic plan for businesses or in a trades program, a youth work program, which I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't do these type of things, the money is going to look like.
But that's an important point you just made again about these programs, Jonathan. We're repeating again. We are repeating. We keep repeating. All the stuff you said is great. We need it. It's there. It's been there. But we keep saying, oh, we need. We have to get to the point where we have, and this is what we're going to do. Instead of because it's been done. And if it's been done, why hasn't it stayed? Again, I keep getting to the point here because I know if I get in a room with a bunch of people, black from black Minnesota, like the Twin Cities, I think it's the Twin Cities Magazine put out the 100 people you should know. Okay. And the black people, I know some of the black people on the 100 people you should know in Minnesota. And
I know all of them.
And some of them are cool, but all of them are safe for white consumption.
Yeah.
Okay. Safe for white consumption.
I haven't seen them. They have never, ever pushed the envelope. It's typically those Negroes on there that's on that 100. They always tell Mace that, oh, man, I support you, Mace. Oh, I love you, Mace. Keep up the good work. Ain't nowhere to support Mace.
No. Wouldn't buy you a hamburger if you were hungry, okay? Wouldn't give you a hamburger or some fries. Wouldn't invite you to the house of social. And again, this is the social upper bourgeoisie in our community that sells a lot of us out. Quite a bit. And we got to get to the point where, hey, this is what we want to do. This is how it's going to happen. I'm having challenges in the city of St. Paul, and I'm like, wait. No. You can't do that. I'm not going to get into specifics because I do respect the mayor and his programs that he puts out there for education. But at a later date, I'll run it down to you because it's off the chain, but you're not going to believe it. But it's happened before. And to my white Republican friends that might be watching this, defend it when I say because we're black. It's not – none of us are victims, but we have to face the reality. We were wearing a mask before COVID-19, okay? And so if we go into a room or into a situation, we got to qualify ourselves. That's the first thing. The second thing, this kid asked me, he says, why do you talk white? I said, what? I think you got that mixed up with right, R-I-G-H-T. Say that again. And he looked at me. He goes, oh, my bad. But he was saying that because my point is the mindset in our community is not focused on the things that it needs to be focused on to heal and develop better things. And until that happens, we're going to get screwed every time. Okay, we might as well walk around with some Vaseline in our back pockets, tell you the truth, because it's not happening the way it should happen. Minnesota has such a small black population, but there's so many silos. And everybody's not going to do the kumbaya, come together and hug and work with each other, but there are some powerful entities. But they forget.
You're right. And, the bourgeoisie group, the group that just got a little money, they might have got five, they're balling. You run into these people who are the status quo protectors, right? And they are strategically put in places to be able to stop individuals like myself who come in the door like a raging bull in the china shop, ready to create this change, whether it's Ed Graff. You know, I got people, Mason, stop, Ed Graff. No, Ed Graff was in Anchorage, Alaska. No black folks around. You went up there and interviewed $250,000, right? And you say, how in the world did you spend $250,000 to try to find an individual who wants to fulfill the superintendent role? You're playing with our money. And see, when I come across these facts and I speak this, people say, oh, don't be around. Please stop, Mason, from, and it's the bourgeoisie. The white folks are with me. They can speak how they want to. They, oh, my gosh, Mason, you're so progressive. And then they follow everything I say to make themselves look good. But when do we say, like you say, this is how it is. This is what it's going to be. We're going to create our own legislation. You guys, I don't chuck and jive. I'm not going to scratch my head when it doesn't itch. I'm not going to dance when there's no music. I'm going to continue to keep, you know, keep pushing the status quo and pushing it around in the envelope.
So let me ask you a question, Jonathan, just quickly here. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Anthony.
So Jonathan, you know, how in the world, I know you've heard about this on Lake Street. This 40 million development that's coming that seems to be headed by some of our Somali community in this area. It's going to be a $40 million development where there's going to be housing, there's going to be retail. How do these happen right under our eyes? And it's really, to me, the timing of these things where, okay, Lake Street has been destroyed. So all the demolition and everything has been done. So the rebuilding can just start without paying for the demolition. They don't have to do any of the and they can get this $40 million for their community.
Yeah.
People that have cared not as long as the legacy people that have been in this city, and they do it with great fanfare. They put it right in your face.
Hey,
big thing. Great fanfare.
The black community, once again, we dropped the ball. I really wanted and it was done during the transition of the presidency of the NAACP. We don't have any advancement. We don't have any. There's no $40, $80 million projects going. The Somali community, once again, hit a lick. They got $40 million to build the new Carmel Mall. And you know, business is booming on the South Side. We had white supremacists coming to our communities to be able to exploit the George Floyd murder. They came in, the Boogaloo Boys. These are federal indictments that happened. They came, burned our buildings down. Community gets millions of dollars to rebuild it. The black community, once again, is shuffled around. We got to move to Brooklyn Center. They be harassed all day. Get out to parts of St. Paul. They ain't got no money. We go to Minneapolis. You can't go downtown. There ain't no jobs for you. We're, once again, not in a position to play ball. And when do we say it? And look, I'm not mad at the Somali community. You know, they hit it big, like you said, just like our producer said. Congratulations. The Somali community hit it big, $40 million. But who in the hell is fighting for black America?
Exactly.
Who in the hell is saying, do we get at least $80 million? Do we get $80 million? Or are you going to keep on giving us 1% of what we're worth like you did with Jamar Clark and Justine DeMond? The same group of people, look, the same Minneapolis City Council, Felipe Cunningham, Jeremiah Ellison, Andrea Jenkins, who was the last vote on the last defund the police, it was the swing vote. When are you guys going to fight for us? When are you going to say, we need $80 million, let Mason oversee some of the project to be able to make sure it's done right? He'll get the appropriate people in there that ain't going to rob the black community, and he'll hold them accountable. When are we going to do that? Because guess what? Time I turn around, it's another $40 million from the Somali community. And I know Lacey Johnson was talking about bringing some economic development to the north side. And guess what the black folks did? They voted for the Somali woman, again, who can't stand the Somali community. Okay, she wants to be part of the white liberals. That's why she married that white liberal man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. True. Real talk.
We know what's going on. And I hate to be honest, but that's the only way I know how to be.
And so when are we going to say we're going to demand Andrea Jenkins, Felipe Cunningham, Jeremiah Ellison, Cameron Gordon, who plays like he's with the community? When are we going to demand for them to say, you know what, it's time to give them $100 million? And I'm not talking just Don Samuel.
Yeah, I don't have
And throw $1 million for me and Don to keep on telling the truth on KSTP or Fox 9 once every Saturday morning and bring on, and also our other host, Anthony Scott, to come in on a KSTP Saturday morning. It's only $150,000 a piece to be able to get this news to the black community so we can actually create taxpayers.
No, we're gonna do the Minnesota black thing, Jonathan. We're going to have Anthony come on for free, and we're going to get paid.
But I had to say no. Our other co-hosts.
We're going to be just like they are in the community. You know, there's cats sitting in our community that have a lot of money right now. And I call it ill-gotten gains and blood money. And they're sitting up there, you know I call them the Reverend Wiener dudes because their belly sticks out farther than fill you out the rest. Anyway, because they're happy, they're walking around, they're eating steaks, they're having a good time, and, you know, that's their business. I don't give a damn about how much money you make. That really doesn't impress me. It's like, how many other wealthy people have you created? You know? And I'm not saying by giving anybody anything, but just making an opportunity. And there's not a lot of folks out there willing to give up the reins. And you don't even have to give up the reins. You can show. You could guide, you could mentor, you could say a kind word in a group of people that might be diverse and want to swing one way when you need them to swing another way. So it's not really happening right now with these cats. And it was very unfortunate to see the turn of events with the Minneapolis City Council and how it just dwarfs the do-nothing St. Paul City Council. And it's upsetting, but, you know, that's where we are right now, and it's hard to make a different thing go. What do you think, Ant?
Thinking, you know, just like what we've been talking about, you know, the $40 million, this is coming from our money. This is coming from taxpayers' dollars. This is being supported by the city of Minneapolis. And there's no reason whatsoever that we couldn't take, let's just say, the 38th Street area, the 38th Street corridor of South Minneapolis, to make that into another business and jobs type of a corridor. I mean, if they can do that on Lake Street, if they can put their planners, they have city planners, they have all these people that know how to put these things together, well, why don't they work with us to develop the 38th Street area? They've got the street blocks. The little businesses that are there are being choked off because you can't go through the streets, you can't go. Why don't we just say, look, we want this area to be a business hub. We like some schools there. We like some education there. And we've just, as Jonathan, you know, we've said it, we've just been left out. And we have to hit these people hard.
And
the only way it's going to happen, we probably have to get some of these people off the city council. We have to get some people in there that really want to fight for their community, not to sit up there and just go along to get along. We are in dire straits right now.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong. And I agree. I agree with you 100%, but we are in a dire situation right now, especially in education, because, you know, we're almost at the point where we're just going to have to get some folks together and create a district within a district or district within districts of schools for our kids, because of all these studies that keep coming out from these. And I just stumble upon this stuff and it just freaks me out. And then I work more with my little kids, right? But it's telling me that in less than 10 years, there's going to be a 73% gap between blacks and Hispanics because of the technology piece, not understanding the technology and all these technology jobs that are coming up. And not only that, there's not good writers, readers, or people that can discern or comprehend coming out of these high schools. So it's a downhill slope. So that right there ought to invoke an emergency and loosen up funds to even create a district within a district between Minneapolis and St. Paul, you know,
right,
that kids from both sides of the river can go to that look like us, but also need the academic acumen to survive higher education, period.
Right.
So,
right. And you know, we're looking at, you know, when you look at the statistics in the future, we're looking at future forecasts for the black community. We're still floating around 13%. We have the most kids in the world, but we're still floating at 13%. And this is because we're killed. in, you know, the line of duty, you know, when people, the police are in the line of duty. We had multiple killings this week, you know, and that traumatizes kids. You know, people are hearing about this. You know, we had Casey Goodson, who was an individual with Subway sandwiches walking inside of his house. We have, can you hear me, Don?
Yes, I can hear you. Okay.
And we had, you know, another individual last night by the name of Joshua Feast. He was gunned down in the back. So now kids are hearing about this. Their parents are struggling. They're upset with police. Schools are, you know, not proficient in what they're doing. And so that's leading the kids not proficient in math and reading and all the things that they need to do. And now we're left in this crazy, crazy position where if we don't get it together for the black community and start teaching our kids, teaching our own our experiences, we're going to be in this disaster for a very long time. And I think that we have the opportunity right now to say, you know, let's put aside all of our own egos, our own agendas, and let's come together and say, how can we make this better, whether it's in education, whether it's in business, whether it's in politics, whether it's in economic development, being able to, you know, put bids in as a general contractor in our, you know, on projects within our own community. I always talk about the broken window theory, and a lot of us learn this in college, and many black individuals in Minnesota don't even go to college. But what I learned in college, one of the few things I learned in college was the broken window theory, and being that, you know, our communities are tore up and we have windows that are shattered and, you know, sides of buildings falling off.
Looks like Baltimore. looks like Baltimore, man.
It looks like Baltimore.
Yeah, really.
And we have to be able to jump upon these things that society has, feel like we're a part of this society, and I think that we have an opportunity to do so. But I don't see it under Biden or any of these administrations, so I believe it's going to get really bad before it gets a lot worse, or better.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you bring up the NAACP. There's a court case from 2000, I would say 2002, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't see a date on here. Against Ron Edwards against the NAACP.
Wow.
He sued them for some stuff that they were doing, and as you know, he was one of the only black men in the United States expelled from the NAACP from a national level because he went to expose the bag man and the cash that was going on here in Minneapolis when the president at the time of the NAACP came here. So, you know, it was a lot of chaos. And the only thing, Jonathan, that I don't see that happened a lot during Mr. Edwards' tenure with the NAACP and then with the Minneapolis Urban League, and we've had these conversations because he was the longest-seated chairman of the Minneapolis Urban League, chairman of the board, 15 years plus. And so he saw all these issues. He says, okay, we got to try to figure out to circumvent this. He goes, so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to start working with you. This is like when I was well over 40 years old, right? And so I appreciate the knowledge, but what I had the epiphany was that, again, I'm going to go back to this and beat it like a dead horse. We're repeating. And we have to stop before we get to that point because Biden, Harris, Jacob Frey, Governor Walz, Melvin Carter, you know, we are, black Minnesotans are the excess of a quota system created by this structure that some can get in and some cannot get in. And until we figure out how to beat that down, we have to have ideas. And there are people out there that will fund the ideas. The problem is we don't have a lot of people that look like us that are willing to take that opportunity.
Or take that chance.
Yeah,
right?
And it is a chance. Or it depends on how you look at it.
Or opportunity, yeah. Like you said, you know, you can be almost stunned within Minnesota if you begin to speak the truth, you call out some, you know, powers that be, you might be shunned. And, you know, for me, luckily, you know, I have God that looks out for me and keeps me rolling. But there is a group of individuals that like the status quo. And like you said, we have to stop ourselves before it repeats. repeating ourselves all the damn time.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know what? We've already talked about this. How do we go on and do what Mr. Edwards already said and done and make this change within our own community? And not only that, have others to come on board and say, hey, you know, there's been multiple probably disagreements or on a micro level change the macro problem within our own community. So
I agree. And we have 5 more minutes left, but we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Who's calling? And I think I know that number, Mr. Tucker.
Yeah.
Hello?
You know what I want to say to you guys. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. What I want to say is that I'm hearing things that I heard 60 years ago, and nothing has changed in 60 years ago. I go to these meetings and I hear what I call the Rip Van Winkles wake up and think they're coming to the table with some new ideals. Those ideals have already been discussed 60 years ago. I was in these rooms after the riots of the 60s and other disturbances. Since 1958, I go back there. I haven't heard anything new since 1958. Okay? And, you know, you guys got it a little different. You got to understand that some of the people we support do not have the skill set to carry this to its fruition. They don't have it. The city council people are little boys and girls, in my judgment, do not have the skill set to move forward. They don't have the experience. They don't have the connections. They don't have anything. You can talk to the cows come home. It's not going to change anything. I met a group of people who got 5 to 7 people in business. They call that the span of control. And you get those people together to do something. The Somalians got a $40 million project that the city of Minneapolis has supported for them. $40 million. You don't have that with some of these spokespersons. They're not business people. They're just
right.
Not business people. And you can talk, everybody knows all those statistics. That doesn't help us. I think you need to concentrate on specificity. For instance, have you heard of Mein Kampf, Hitler's propagandist? I don't know what happened to me, but all of a sudden when I heard Donald Trump, I heard Hitler. I heard Mein Kampf. I don't know how, you know, because that's through my radical days back in the 50s and 60s. You know, you guys aren't well read and you don't understand what the issues are, and you don't understand what Trump is doing with the Mein Kampf ideals. You know, we gotta rethink this thing. You can give me all the statistics till the cows come home. Doesn't mean
yep.
a damn thing. Most people don't understand what you're saying anyway. You know, I never forget.
Right.
I was at a meeting at the Minority Contractors in 1975, and a good friend of mine who got in the middle of the room and said, given the fruition of plethora of events that are taking place, no one in this room has the demonstrative skills to carry this project to its fruition. And a god darn person in the room understood what he was saying. You got to understand it's more fundamental than that. You got some good young minds there, Mason, good young minds, but you got to rethink it. You got to rethink it. You got to find 2 or 3 people that you can work with and do those. The rest of us, like Professor Gould says, there's more differences among a culture of people than there are between a culture of people. You take 100 black people, 100 white people, 100 Native Americans, and so forth. You're only going to have 5 or 10% of those people that can carry the ball across the line. You're always going to have 10, 15% of those people at the bottom and the rest in the middle someplace. You got to
yep.
understand that. The fundamentals, Mason, your fundamentals is askew. It's askew. every week you say the same thing. And you don't have a course of action. You keep repeating that every week, saying the same thing. I don't want to hear all those statistics. I've been in the room where I've splurged all those statistics back in the 60s. And I don't want to get really bad what they told me in using four-letter words. You know, we don't want to hear that, blah, 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 blah. You know, they already know that.
Yeah,
you know, that doesn't mean anything. What, you know, it's the old Native American proverb. So what? So what are you going to do about it? What's your course of action? Don't tell me the statistics are A, B, and C. What's your course of action? You don't have a course of action. Do you know who Mein Kampf is? Have you read the Constitution? Have you read the Federalist Papers?
Yep.
You know,
I ain't that wild now.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Tucker, we're at the end of the show, but I really appreciate you calling in and laying down the law. And maybe we have you just come on next week so we can really break this down the way we need to break it down.
Have a course of action ready for me. Your course of action.
And we'll have a course of action, and then we'll just do it like that because we're going to have to at some point.
I want to see what your course of action is.
Mason, let me say something. I'm going to go to the curve with you. I'm an old guy. The game ain't to be told, it's to be sold. I ain't telling, I'm selling. Okay?
Okay. All right. Bye. Thank you, Mr. Tucker. Appreciate it.
See you, Tucker.